On this episode of China Unscripted, China continues to cover up the deadly coronavirus, and nobody trusts the government. Plus, where did the coronavirus really come from? Hi, welcome to the China Unscripted podcast. I'm Chris Chappell.
I'm Shelley Zhang.
And I'm Matt Ganesta.
Real quick, I just want to thank our sponsors, Path of Cha, that is supporting this channel. If you buy some tea from them, it helps out the show. So go to go.pathofcha.com/unscripted, and you'll be helping out the show. So today we're going to be talking about the coronavirus, I guess what you would call the Chinese Communist Party's initial solution for dealing with it. So it's come out now that when this mysterious virus started spreading around, the first thing the Communist Party did was to start arresting doctors who were beginning to warn people, hey, there's some weird SARS-like virus going around. Maybe we should look into this.
Well, I mean, to be fair, it wasn't the first thing that they did. But it was like one of the first like five or six things they did.
That's right. Well, apparently one of the problems was in Wuhan, where the virus first broke out. There was some kind of days-long Communist Party conclave that was running from like January 11th to January 17th. So, you know, they didn't report any of these new. They didn't report any new cases. They didn't talk about this virus because mostly what Chinese state-run media was talking about at the time was Xi Jinping's 2020 plan to eliminate poverty.
Not just that, but like, so by the time this Communist Party meeting happened, though, it had already been well over a month before the first cases were seen.
Yeah.
Right, the first reported case was December 1st, right? So, but it was covered up. I mean, that was the time where if it had happened in, say, the United States, and there was a case on December 1st by, you know, December 15th or something, 2 weeks in, you would definitely have the CDC and other agencies like concerned about it, quarantining people, making sure that, you know, this wasn't going to spread. And that would be the period where you could really just clamp it off. But in China, they just let it go for like 40 days and actually stopping it.
It was a little more complicated. So I think now we know that the first cases were in very early December, but I think at the time, you know, it didn't start to be alarming to the medical community until like mid-December, when suddenly you had a cluster of these cases, right? Some of them connected to this particular wet market in Wuhan, and people talking about, you know, not knowing what kind of, and a lot of people getting viral pneumonia from it. So the pneumonia was noticeable, but they didn't know what it was.
That's why some of the doctors were like, oh, it seems to be a SARS-related kind of thing.
Yeah, so they were comparing it to SARS or, you know, like, but like a lot of things were kind of now putting the pieces together, only now putting the pieces together. So at the time it seemed like, oh, there's some kind of SARS-like viral pneumonia. But they were tamping down. Like, actually, I think the worst thing that the local Wuhan government did is that when they started reporting on this in, like, late December, they made it seem like there was no human-to-human transmission at all.
Yeah.
When now, looking back, it seems clear that by mid-December, there had already been cases of human-to-human transmission of the virus. So they did things like, they continued to promote their, like, Chinese New Year festivities. You know, there have been multiple news reports about people who were reassured by what the government said that you couldn't get it from other people. So they went out to like New Year's markets and fairs, and the Wuhan government even had this like huge, like they were trying to get the biggest New Year's feast, like Guinness World Records thing or something like that. So they had like a big feast for like 40,000 families or something like that.
Well, because the Chinese New Year is a time when like there are 3 billion trips Chinese people do.
I mean, you know, and everybody, it's not just like these big mass things either. It's also like everybody goes to like, you go to all your friends and family's houses to like visit each other and all this stuff.
A bad time for an epidemic disease to begin to spread.
Right.
But, well, a good time from the perspective of the disease.
Virus news.
We're being too specious with our understanding of this. But yeah, like I just read an interesting piece in the Washington Post about it was a great example. Like this 76-year-old man, he was like, well, you know, the media is not reporting any cases of the virus. It doesn't seem bad. I'm going to go out and do these New Year's celebration. And then he got infected. He didn't know. Then he went to like some parents' conference, got his daughter sick, and then like all of these parents got quarantined, and now he just recently died.
Oh, that guy was in Beijing, actually, I think.
Oh, he was in Beijing?
The guy that died, I think, was in Beijing. Am I making this up? Maybe
you
it was
might
wrong.
Be.
I've been reading too much coronavirus stuff, so that like
it's
all
together.
Blending together.
Yeah.
Oh no. He traveled to a meeting in Wuhan. Oh, there are two different guys. The guy that you're talking about, mm-hmm. who went to the festivals, mm-hmm. he was like local in Wuhan. He came back and gave it to his daughter mm-hmm. accidentally. So the Washington Post interviewed this family where the son-in-law has been going to hospitals every day to try to get like test kits so they can test his...
Which are in extremely yes. limited supply.
And meanwhile, his wife, the daughter, and her father are both sick, and they're just quarantining them at home in separate mm-hmm. bedrooms. And the other guy who died is a... His name is Yang Jun. He was like a sales executive who traveled to a meeting in Wuhan in early January, returned home to Beijing via Shanghai on the train, and then... he got sick, checked himself into the hospital, but right before that he had gone to a school event and, you know, for his daughter, and then like mm-hmm. sat in the audience with like hundreds of people who now have to, the school is asking all the parents to quarantine themselves, and he did die.
Yeah. And again, this is because if you were reading the papers, all the state-run media, they were only talking about Xi Jinping's plans to eliminate poverty. And if you read between the lines, that's kind of what happened.
Oh, that's so dark, Chris.
Well, it's the Chinese Communist Party.
I mean, I do, like, one thing that is good that you mentioned, in terms of what you're saying, is that it's good to remember that for, like, a lot of this will disproportionately affect the poorer people in China.
Yeah.
Like, Wuhan is a city of 11 million people, but it's not a first-tier city. Their hospital system is being overwhelmed, but we don't even know what's happening in the more rural areas mm-hmm. around Wuhan. You know?
It began at this wet market, which is selling live exotic animal meats to probably your less well-off citizen.
Well, I mean, I think for wet markets, like there's a little bit of a maybe like people don't really know what they are. So because we've been reporting and other media have been reporting on all the live animals like that are being sold at wet markets, people might think that like it's only an exotic animal market, but like wet markets are basically like for a lot of people, just where they go buy groceries.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's a huge part of China's food supply chain. Like think of like a farmer's market, right? Where you have all these like stalls together, but you also have people like butchering animals and selling raw meat and selling live animals. Like you could take some live chickens home, you mm-hmm. know, that kind of stuff. But for Chinese people, like people who don't have a supermarket close by, or maybe the prices in the wet market are better, or Chinese people really like fresh food. And there's this idea that wet markets are fresher.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you buy a live chicken,
that's
it hasn't been sitting around.
That is about as fresh as it gets.
Yeah.
But, you know, so it's not just like people going out to eat exotic animals that are going to these wet markets. It's just like if you were worried about going down to your like corner grocery store, you know, and getting sick from that. Like there was a terrible story I read actually in Chinese, a semi-Chinese state-run media called The Paper, and it was translated to English by another state-run media called Six Tone. About this woman who was like a 36-year-old woman. She was pregnant. She went to a wet market just to get food for dinner. Like she picked up some fish and like vegetables. And then like she got sick from it. And because she was pregnant, they couldn't give her, like you can't give a pregnant woman a lot of particular medications because it'll harm the fetus. And so she like died within 10 days. Like she was on a respirator.
Oh, wow.
Her husband spent like all of their life savings, plus like had to borrow money from friends and relatives. Like basically had to spend the equivalent of his yearly income every day to keep her alive on a ventilator.
Jeez. So, I mean, this has got to be making people furious at the Chinese Communist Party. Because, again, like you had early on, there were doctors trying to raise the alarm. They got arrested. There were eight people who were arrested early on, and it has only recently come out that they were all doctors trying to warn people. There were people online trying to talk about what was happening, like trying to get information because the state-run media wasn't saying anything, and the response from the government was, well, let's give people who are, quote, spreading rumors 3 to 7 years in jail.
Yeah, they were warning people that if you spread rumors that they're SARS or something, you're going to get 3 to 7 years in prison.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's also, now we know that the first eight people who were arrested were all doctors. Do you want to talk about that case, like how that one doctor came out?
Oh, yeah. So initially, I don't remember his name off the top of my head. I don't know if you have that, Shelley.
It's Li Wenliang.
Okay.
Li Wenliang.
Well, that's pretty good. He was on like a private WeChat group where he was talking to other like medical students about this.
Well, people he had been in medical school with.
Yeah, and it was like an interview with him, and he was kind of talking about this. And then somehow or another, screenshots got leaked online, and you know, obviously people were like, "Oh my gosh, what's happening?" And then that got purged from the internet, and he was called in to meet with police. And yeah, he was arrested. And the saddest part is like he also got infected trying to treat patients.
Yeah, apparently he's an ophthalmologist of all things, but like he had heard these cases happening in his particular hospital, which is Wuhan Central Hospital, tried to warn like a group of his friends, like who are also doctors in a WeChat group. Somebody started spreading those screenshots around on the wider Chinese social media, and then the police made him sign a statement saying that he would stop spreading rumors about it.
And do you have more to add to that?
Well, like you said, then like weeks later, he now has the coronavirus.
Yeah, and it gets me like when like the World Health Organization starts praising how the Chinese Communist Party responded to the virus. Because it's just mind-boggling. Like, for instance, like in mid-January when, like, it started spreading internationally because obviously they tried to cover it up and so the virus just spread and spread and spread and now went overseas, the party began to release some information about the virus, but they left out, like, loads of information doctors around the world would need to, like, actually be able to handle this, like... epidemiologists need to know, like, when people get sick, what the symptoms are, demographics, like age and gender, and they didn't release any of that because they were still trying to cover it up.
I think they may not have known a lot of that, too, in a certain level. Like, I was just trying to read an article in the New England Journal of Medicine that is a retrospective look at the first, like, 425 people who got sick, and it has all of this information that the epidemiologists need. But, you know, when you can't really report on that, like, you know...
Yeah, when doctors are being arrested, when people online are being arrested.
Like, the doctors were able to synthesize... Like, they were able to basically construct the DNA of the virus quickly enough so that they could get a test done. But, like, when you're not allowed to talk about the cases, then you have a harder time gathering this information. And I think it's not just the cover-up. Mm-hmm. There is also just, like... This is exposing all of the holes in China's healthcare system, really.
Yeah, I was reading like how like there's been efforts to like modernize the technology of it, which unfortunately a lot of that is so they can successfully harvest the organs of political prisoners in China. That's a big separate topic. But so they're modernizing the technology, but the political system is still in the Stone Age.
Well,
you know, I think one of the things that distinguishes the Chinese political system from the U.S. is a strong versus weak government. And the U.S. has a weak government and China has a strong government. And what I mean by that is in China, the officials, whether they're local officials or higher officials, they have enormous power in their region, right, over their fiefdom. But with that power comes also the responsibility. It's not a Spider-Man reference, but I just...
Uh-huh. Okay. I saw it like dawn on your face as you realized what you were saying.
I know, but it's true though. I mean, Peter Parker was right, but my point is,
I think it was technically Uncle Ben.
Uncle Ben was right. Thank you, Accuracy Ninja. But so the point is that when local officials are very powerful, they're also very held responsible for what happens in their region. And so when things go wrong, the officials themselves can get purged. And we're going to likely see the mayor of Wuhan be purged because the outbreak happened in his city. Now, let's look at a weak government like the United States. If an outbreak happened in New York City, people would not blame Bill de Blasio for that outbreak. I mean, they could blame how he handled it, but it's not really his responsibility in the same way. And you could have doctors criticize how the government's handling it and push the government to take action faster. If it was a quarantine issue or whatever, doctors can spread things quickly because the government can't and won't crack down on the way people talk about the virus. And so in the case of building high-speed rails, people say, oh, look at how great, you know, the Chinese system is. But when it comes to an issue that could affect really very directly the lives of people, this weak government that you have in the United States and other democratic countries, the weak government is an advantage because the rights of people and the freedoms of people are an advantage in terms of raising awareness. And the weakness of the government means that the local officials are not incentivized to cover up in the same way that they would be in an authoritarian system.
I think it's also interesting when you mentioned the Wuhan mayor taking the fall. The Wuhan mayor is not actually the highest ranking official in Wuhan. It's actually the Wuhan party secretary. So it's interesting that the Wuhan mayor was initially the one that had to come out and like say some stuff about how they didn't handle it well.
Which ties into how the Communist Party is dealing with this. They're trying to isolate it from the failure of the Communist Party and the system itself and try and force it the blame on local officials.
I mean, the Wuhan party secretary said nothing for a long time, and then only this past week did he come out and kind of apologize for it. But the face of it for a long time was the Wuhan mayor, mm-hmm. who is politically weaker than the party secretary. Yeah.
Which is why he came out and was like, hey, actually, it's this whole system of lack of transparency that's being issued by Beijing that is responsible for this.
He was like, my supervisors wouldn't let me report it.
Famous last words.
He's so going down.
Yeah, well, I mean, maybe he knows it and he's just trying to. I mean, honestly, once Xi Jinping came out on the 20th and said that we need to resolutely fight the outbreak and all this stuff, we're going to curb the outbreak. Basically, if you're a Wuhan official, that was the time to, like, get out of Dodge.
Yeah, well, there was the whole thing of the report that, like, local officials who try and cover this up will be nailed to the pillar of shame for eternity.
Also, in the same article was they have committed the worst sin of generations or something. Like, it was, yeah, there was some colorful language there. Yeah, but I do think that an interesting thing... It is definitely the government and the Communist Party cover-up that's in the way the system is. But also, I want to go back to the healthcare system for a second because I think that is still affecting, even though now, supposedly, like, they're not supposed to be covering up the cases. You know, they're supposed to, like, I think the current state of the Chinese healthcare system is one reason why you still can't trust the numbers coming out of China about the virus.
Right. I mean, they also don't have adequate test kits.
Yes.
So if you don't test it, then it doesn't count.
Well, that's the problem. And a lot of people have been dying with – there are a lot of these anecdotal cases people are talking about where people have died of viral pneumonia, but they were never tested either because, you know, they couldn't get into a hospital to get tested or – the hospitals, they all lack supplies right now. Like, they don't have enough face masks. They don't have enough, you know, the biohazard suits. They don't have enough, like Matt said, test kits. So they literally have to pick who they think is the most likely to have the virus and test them. But also, this is a problem for the spread because there could be a lot of people who have milder cases of the virus mm-hmm. who just do not get detected. and then they're still walking around spreading it.
Well, isn't it that you can spread the virus up to 2 weeks before any symptoms show?
Well, right now it's a little... This is why also it's hard to get a full picture because the data might not be complete coming out of China, mm-hmm. where most of the far majority of the cases are. So it looks like people can be asymptomatic up to 2 weeks, but most people show symptoms within, like, around 5 days is the average.
But so 5 days is a long time.
Yes.
In 5 days, you can travel halfway around the world showing no symptoms. You can go to parties and supermarkets and anything, you know, with no symptoms and infect hundreds of people.
So it's unclear right now how infectious people are when they are asymptomatic. There seem to be some cases where people have maybe infected people where they were asymptomatic, but there's not enough data.
And I should also point out at this point, like right now, the flu is by far a more serious issue in like the United States than this coronavirus.
Yeah.
Like I had a friend who is a teacher at like a high school, and he was telling me the other day, like some kids were wearing like, you know, the face mask, and then they were like pointing to like a Chinese student or some Asian student. We're like, oh my God, what's that? He's got the, are they sick? And so, you know, chill out, everyone. Like, the flu is more likely to get you than this coronavirus.
Yeah, I mean, the flu is less deadly than the coronavirus, but it spreads much more easily, and, you know, millions more people have the flu. Mm-hmm. So it causes way more deaths in a year than the coronavirus has.
This mysterious coronavirus.
But I think, you know, it is understandable that people get scared.
Whenever
there's a new virus and there's no vaccine for the virus, whereas there are flu vaccines, whether they work well or not is kind of depending on...
Or whether or not they are actually secretly government mind control serums.
Yeah, that's... that is a different podcast, Chris.
Where am I?
But there's just... We know how to deal with the flu, and it's unclear in some ways how... You know, the virus can mutate. There are a lot of things that are known. Like, I was reading the first case of the New England Journal of Medicine, and you can go read all these articles on their website. They're not, like, paywalled or anything. Had the first case in the U.S., which was a guy in his mid-30s who went back to Wuhan to visit family for the new year, came back, started showing symptoms, and then went to an urgent care place. And then it turned out that he had the coronavirus, and then... They had his whole disease course, and then I hadn't seen some things before. Like, apparently, the virus was showing up in his fecal matter. So that was something that, like, that had only been started to be seen for the first time. So there's a lot of things that we're now, like, starting to understand better. Yeah. But, like I said, the lack of information, the fact that, like, a lot of these people who have it in China probably aren't being tested, so they're not being identified. They could be dying in greater rates than we know, or there could be a lot of people who've recovered from it that we don't know. Like, that's why it's really uncertain right now.
And if I may, I digress for just a moment. I hate when I see like some article like deadly pandemic, what you need to know, and you click on it and it's like subscribe to the news and then you'll get to read this full article. I hate this paywall subscription stuff. It's like, this is critical information, and then I get there, and you just can't read it unless you subscribe to these stupid channels.
I think that there should be certain things that are not paywalled.
Yeah, there are some pretty important things that should be news.
I have no problem with paywalls. It's just that if everybody paywalls really important things that are critical to public health, then. Overall, it becomes much more difficult.
Don't build the paywall.
I do think that like some news organizations will unpaywall things that are, you know, crises or, you know, public health issues or whatever.
I've had this problem with like Wall Street Journal, Washington Post, New York Times.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know that they've done it for the coronavirus stuff yet at all, but I know that they will unpaywall certain things.
Yeah. Well, that's why you got to listen to China Unscripted or China Uncensored or America Uncovered, because
we don't have paywalls.
We give it away for free. What are we doing?
Oh my God.
If you want to hear the rest of this podcast, please send $10 to in an unmarked box in the all right. I'm trying to avoid taxes.
Okay, so you definitely shouldn't have said that, because now you're going to get audited.
Oh, God. That was a joke, IRS. I know you have a great sense of humor. So
tax collectors, well known for their comedic potential.
Bucket of chuckles.
Well, I mean, yeah, you're right, Chris. It's important to not panic about the coronavirus.
Yes, that's what I was saying.
If you don't live in China.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, Wuhan, we have no idea what the situation in Wuhan is now. Like, I believe today the numbers of officially confirmed cases, like 13,000.
Now it's 14,000.
It just goes up so quick. But, you know, then you also have, like, a video of, like, supposedly a whistleblowing nurse in Wuhan saying, actually, the numbers are 90,000. So, yeah, we, like, in the city of Wuhan and areas around China, even in Hong Kong, we don't know. I was talking to a friend in Hong Kong, and they were freaked out.
Yeah, people, you can see, like, lines and lines of people trying to get face masks. Like, I mean, remember, Hong Kong was pretty hard hit by SARS, mm-hmm. too.
The other cover-up.
Yes, yeah, so people really remember. Like, people are, like, freaked out about this, and there are, you know, doctors and nurses threatening to go on strike if the Hong Kong government doesn't close the border with mainland China, which Carrie Lam has said that she cannot do that because that would be racist. Not in so many words, but, like, we all know the real reason is because she doesn't have any control over closing the Hong Kong border. It's up to, you know, the central government and the Communist Party, and they're probably telling her no. But, like, she has to come up with reasons, and one of them is that, like, it would be discrimination to close the border.
See, what I don't like, among many things, is that the Communist Party is still, like, they're using this to play politics with Hong Kong, because the Communist Party knows that as long as the coronavirus is spreading in Hong Kong, it's much, much less likely that Hong Kongers will come out to protest.
And people won't pay attention to it as much.
Yeah. And so, honestly, like, the Communist Party loves that it's in Hong Kong, which is a super messed up thing. But, like, politically, this is perfect for the Communist Party.
I don't know, because, like, sure, short term, people won't come out and protest because they're concerned about the virus. But I think any contingent of people in Hong Kong who are like, no, you know, Beijing, central government, they got our best interests in mind, I don't think they're going to feel that way after a deadly virus is spreading around because of the cover-up.
People inside China, a lot of people are no longer feeling that way. Like, we've seen several videos from people, both in Wuhan and other parts, well, I think mostly in Wuhan, who have, like, you know, posted videos that have gone viral of them, like, basically blaming the government for the crisis and talking about how helpless they feel about the, you know, the coronavirus, and how, you know, there was that one guy who had a face mask on to cover his identity, but, like, his video went pretty viral on YouTube, where he was basically, like, begging for help from around the world and saying that, like, you know, we're not stupid, like, people my generation, he looked like maybe he's in his 20s or so, he's like, we understand what our government is, we can't do anything about it, we're helpless, but like, we're not stupid, we're not brainwashed. And then there was another woman who came out even without a face mask, and she was just, like, railing against the government. And this all went pretty viral in China. I'm sure it's been shut down now. But, like, that's, you know, the more this spreads, like, the more that feeling of will happen, where, like, there were people who were like, we trust the government. You know, if the government tells us it's not contagious, whatever. And the more this seems to spread, I think the more you'll see people...
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's like that guy named Pan in the Washington Post, where, you know, he was like, oh, yeah, I trust the government. They're not reporting the new cases, so everything's fine. And then he goes and gets infected.
Yeah, and infected his daughter.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it is difficult. I've seen, you got to feel for the people who are in Wuhan or, you know, just in China in generally, because the news is censored. A lot of people know the news is censored. There's a lot of panic. There are also, you know, people know that the news is censored, so they're looking for news on social media or whatever. But a lot of this comes without context. Like, you see these videos of people, you know, like, people lying dead in the street. But, you know, you don't know if these people have died from the pandemic or, you know, you don't know that it's the coronavirus. Like, the AFP had this article about this guy who had this older guy who died and was just lying in the middle of the street for 2 hours. But, like, also, there's nobody on the street, you know? Like, there's, like, very few people out anymore. So he could have collapsed of a heart attack.
Yeah.
And then there was nobody around to help him and nobody to call
an ambulance.
Or
they wouldn't want to go and touch him.
Yeah,
well, then
the
people who came were in hazmat suits because obviously that's a necessary precaution to take. But, like, when you see the picture of a dead body and two guys in hazmat suits...
Like, so there's...
It paints a picture.
Yeah, so there's a lot of panic. And so a lot of these videos are spreading around, too. So you can kind of go to, like, either extreme, right? Where, like, the government says everything's fine, or, you know, we're all gonna die, and, you know.
Well, jumping off that, do we want to talk about sort of, like, the disgusting way people in the West have been kind of profiting off of the coronavirus?
I mean, it's not everybody.
No.
But there are definitely some coronavirus grifters, let's say.
Yeah. Go ahead, explain that.
So, you know, we've seen cases recently where Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube have started cracking down on coronavirus information. You know, on one hand, that is worrying, as is every time they do this. On the other hand, we have definitely seen people who have been trying to use the coronavirus to get their own, like, you know, Twitter accounts or Facebook pages or whatever more popular, and just spreading all sorts of unfounded information. Like, there was this one Twitter account who was just, like, yanking these, like, contextless videos from around the internet and then, like, posting that these were, like, basically very alarmist, like, people are dropping dead in
the
streets.
And this was not a China Twitter guy.
This was a guy who had never tweeted anything about China before. I forget what he was originally tweeting about, but, like, suddenly he starts going coronavirus 24/7, and then when people attempt to correct him, he calls them all, like, CCP trolls and then blocks them. So there were comical things where he called, like, Bai Diotao, who was, like, a very famous, like, Chinese dissident artist, like, a CCP troll, you know? Like, so this was, you see people like this, or there's a guy on YouTube who has never talked about China or infectious diseases or anything before and has suddenly started going 24/7 coronavirus and is getting, like, you know, 500,000 hits on his videos. And so it's just very, it is a thing that is happening where people are using the coronavirus, and it's hard to tell what information is you know, reliable or not,
which does ultimately go back to the initial cover-up. If China were a country with rule of law and transparency, a lot of this would not be an issue.
People are trusting what a nurse says more than they trust the authorities who are supposed to be giving you accurate overall statistics and context.
And also, like, the whole lack of civil society, because, you know, the Chinese Communist Party cannot let there be a civil society. They can't let there be NGOs or nonprofits that are not controlled by the Chinese government. That's why even the Red Cross in China is controlled by the Chinese government.
Yeah, it's not the same organization as the International Red Cross.
The China Red Cross is a separate organization from the International Red Cross. And I've seen, you know, people in China talking about how they don't want to donate to the China Red Cross because they just don't trust it.
Oh, there's cases of, like, money laundering and, like, beautiful women getting money from people in the Chinese Red Cross.
Oh, right, Red Cross officials. Like, there's been huge amounts of corruption, and people just don't trust that, like, if they donate money or supplies, that it'll get to where it needs to go. And, you know, that's that, again, if you had a civil society, if you had, you know, nonprofits who could collect donations or collect, you know, literally the doctors and nurses a couple weeks ago in Wuhan were just begging for supplies. They're like, we don't have enough in the hospitals. And people, there are photos coming out of, like, people using, like, large plastic sheets, you know, like kind of like garbage bag kind of plastic as the hazmat suits because they've run out of hazmat suits, or trying to use, like, gauze to make medical masks. Like, that's not, and, you know, that's not going to filter out the virus.
Right. But, I mean, it's, you know, there was an article last week about Boeing donating 250,000 masks to people in China, which is fantastic. But if you consider that in Wuhan, a city of 11 million people, 250,000 masks is only enough for one in every 40 people for one day, because they're disposable masks. You can't just keep reusing
them. Don't reuse masks, by the way. Do not do that.
Wait, don't? Uh-oh.
Have you been steaming your mask and reusing it, Chris.
Yeah.
There was this Anne Chang, who was this Hong Kong official, who a lot of people think she's one of the people who were claiming that Hong Kong protesters, like the female protesters, were prostituting themselves to the male protesters. Anyway, she was like saying last week that you can totally steam your mask and reuse them. That's what she does all the time. And all the health officials were like, don't say that. That's not true. Stop saying that. And then she kind of like doubled down and tripled down and said it was fine. Like,
if you just read the instructions on the packaging, they will say, like, reuse this.
Ignore the instructions on the mask. Ignore International Health Department.
Basically,
steam your masks.
Anytime. I mean, there's also been reports supposedly of people reselling used masks.
I'm sure.
People are very upset about that. But, like, basically, anytime you take off your mask, you're supposed to put a new one on because that has been compromised now.
And this is also a case where, like, you know, the CDC wanted to go into China and sort of help with the situation, and the Chinese government were like, nope, don't come in. Don't go investigating. We don't want that. Eventually, they accepted help from the World Health Organization, but the World Health Organization has sort of been praising how the Communist Party has handled this all along. So I don't trust the World Health Organization at all.
Well, the World Health Organization, the WHO, is like a UN body,
mm-hmm.
whereas the CDC, the Centers for Disease Control, is a U.S. organization. And I think that there's a big difference between China accepting help from the U.S., which is like a hostile foreign imperialist force, versus accepting help from the UN, which China has an enormous amount of power over in many, many aspects. And so, you know, the World Health Organization, for example, does not recognize Taiwan as a country. So the only way the WHO can actually go in and help Taiwan is if the Communist Party allows it and Taiwan basically recognizes it. It's basically like a total mess. So Taiwan gets screwed more than anyone.
Oh, that definitely happened during SARS, where the World Health Organization wasn't even sharing data with Taiwan because Taiwan wasn't a member state.
I really don't like the World Health Organization. They also have been promoting Chinese vaccines a lot, even though there's many, many scandals involving Chinese vaccines over the years.
And by the way, like, these are not... these are not like conspiracies about vaccines. They're just like
tainted vaccines.
They're just tainted vaccines that are like stored in unsanitary conditions.
Should we give some of the history of some of the other like medical cover-ups the Communist Party?
Sure. There's been so many.
There's been a lot. I mean, obviously, there's SARS in 2003. That's a pretty one-to-one parallel. But then in the 90s, you had cases of like government blood plasma selling schemes only. There were a lot of black market ones, and people were reusing needles. And
they were mixing blood and reinjecting.
And so AIDS started spreading rapidly in like these poor rural villages, and the government did not tell them what was happening.
Everyone has AIDS.
It was Henan province. Yeah. So the provincial officials were like, you can make money.
Yeah.
To the poor farmers. They were like, you can make money by selling your blood plasma.
And when entire villages just started dying off, and like nobody told anything. And this is an example of why the Communist Party covers things up, because eventually later on, the guy, the party secretary in charge of Henan, was Li Keqiang. Li Keqiang is now the premier of China. So definitely his successful cover-up is one of the reasons he did not get purged and instead became one of the top officials.
Well, so, cover-ups are a skill. You know, you have to develop your ability to cover
training.
Up.
You have to be trained through each rank of the Communist Party to get better. You know, Li Keqiang is now in charge of the coronavirus response.
Oh, my gosh. All right. Hey, there we go.
I mean, that's why Li Keqiang was the one going to Wuhan and stuff
that makes sense.
Yeah.
So, like, another case, 2008, the melamine-tainted milk scandal. There were government directives saying, you know, this was the Beijing Olympic time. So they're like, nothing can detract from how great the Olympics are. And so when it became apparent that a lot of these Chinese milk companies were
This is powdered milk, like, for babies, to be clear.
Well, it wasn't just the powdered milk. It kind of was happening on the level where even farmers were adding protein powder, quote unquote.
Mm-hmm.
People were selling things to farmers that they claimed were protein powder, and the farmers were adding it to their milk because that would like raise the protein levels in the milk so they could get better prices for mm-hmm. that milk. And it turned out that that was actually like melamine, like plastic,
a toxic
chemical. But it would show up in the testing as higher protein levels.
Yeah.
So like you could cheat on this one test, but that was the one test being used for protein measurements.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So adding melamine seems like a great idea. I mean, it wasn't that the farmers were doing it on purpose necessarily. It was that you had, you know, a smaller number of suppliers who were pushing this.
Like major companies like Sanlu.
They were just covering it up. If they weren't, Sanlu wasn't like necessarily adding it themselves, but like they were just covering up any reports or cases of babies getting sick.
Getting kidney stones. Well, it's because there was the government directive to make sure nothing interferes with the Olympics. And again, from the Communist Party's perspective, that was successful. Most people internationally will remember how great the Beijing Olympics opening ceremony was, and they don't really remember the 300,000 infants who got sick because of this tainted milk scandal.
Yeah, I mean, like, really, it didn't come out till after the Olympics, even though it had been happening for, you know, months beforehand, so...
Yeah. And then going back to the vaccine thing, there's been many vaccine scandals, but there was a horrible one that came out in 2016 about a woman who was buying expired vaccines and with the help of local officials selling them throughout China. And in the end, it like involved like 24 provinces, 29 pharmaceutical companies, 16 health departments, more than 300 officials. And it was only discovered when like police stumbled upon her, or where she was storing the expired vaccines, and the expired vaccines were being stored in an abandoned, unrefrigerated factory. And, you know, then the government took action by covering it up for a year.
People get really, really mad whenever their children are put at risk in China.
Yeah.
Because, you know, for a long time, you only had one.
Yeah. And again, just to get back to the World Health Organization, for years they've been promoting Chinese vaccines and saying China would be a great place to be manufacturing more medical supplies. In fact, like that is a big goal of the Communist Party. They wanted to, I don't know if they're going to succeed now, but by 2020 they wanted to manufacture like 90% of all generic drugs.
If not the drugs themselves being manufactured in China, a lot of the ingredients, like the compounds, are manufactured in China.
Right, which is to say that people in the U.S. who are, you know, get a prescription for a drug from their American doctor, they go to their local pharmacy, and the drugs they're getting or some of the ingredients in those drugs are manufactured in China.
I mean, I think, though, if that had been a huge problem, we would have seen in terms of, like, I think like the majority of the drugs being manufactured in China are not like tainted or anything. Like if that had been the case, we would have seen cases before now.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Wait, does that mean when I go to get my government mind control serum, it's actually made in China?
If you're talking about the flu vaccine, probably not.
I'm layering conspiracies now. It's conspiracy sandwiches.
I just don't know which part of that to address.
When there are so many problems. But yeah, that's another thing. The sort of conspiracies that are coming out of this, which again happens because there's good information.
We got nailed. Like a lot of people complained when we did the America Uncovered episode about the conspiracy theories that we didn't call them conspiracy theories. We called them conspiracies in the headings.
Oh.
So, yeah, sorry. It should have been conspiracy theories. Theories about conspiracies.
But even though I did, like, clearly say that, like, you know, sometimes conspiracies turn out to be true. Like, the whole cover-up, that would have been a conspiracy at the time, and it's true.
I don't even know if that qualifies as a conspiracy, because everybody was like, yeah, they did it.
Yeah.
You know, like, the people were even joking in China, like, in the early days of the coronavirus when the Wuhan government was like steadily saying that there were only like 41 cases or something in Wuhan. And then meanwhile, people in like Thailand and Japan and stuff were showing up with the coronavirus. People were joking about how it was a very patriotic disease because it was only infecting people outside China. You know, so yeah, there's some black humor.
Yeah, definitely. Early on, like I remember, I think like on January 22nd, like the official number was like 543 confirmed cases in China for that day.
And that's after it had already, like, tripled in the last, like, 3 days.
Well, yeah, that's where you had, like, in London, there's a group called the MRRC, Global Infectious Disease Analysis, or something like that.
Oh, this is the Lancet article?
Yeah, I think so. And like, they were saying, like, no, for it to be spreading internationally, there would need to be at least 1,700 cases in Wuhan alone.
Yeah, I mean, they've upward revised that number several times since then.
Yeah, I mean, the numbers just keep climbing.
I mean, this is why...
Just keep climbing.
And I think this is why, one reason people get panicked, too, because the numbers are growing so quickly.
Mm-hmm.
But again, this is the data problem. Like, we're not sure if that, like, people are being infected that quickly, or if, like, now, like, a lot of things are just being belatedly, you know, reported because they weren't reported before, or finally they have enough test kits, or, you know, that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So when people freak out about, like, maybe how many people are being... You know, how many people each person is infecting, or, you know, how deadly the disease is, or how quickly it's spreading. Again, I'm not sure we have good enough data from China yet to really figure that out.
But it is scary. Like, you know, there's now somebody under investigation in New York for potentially having this virus. I think we talked about that earlier. And, you know, I've had people say to me, like, we just came back from Taiwan, where the virus was spreading, like, right before or during our time there. People were like, hey, you just got back from Taiwan, are you, do you have the virus?
Well, we have passed our 14-day quarantine period from Taiwan. Like, it's been more than 2 weeks since we've come back from Taiwan. But yeah, actually, I was thinking about that when we were in the Taiwan airport, that, like, you know, there but at the time we were in Taiwan, there had been no cases in Taiwan yet.
I mean, it doesn't help that, like, I remember as a kid watching the movie Outbreak, which is like it was a movie about like a super version of Ebola, like airborne Ebola. I think that's what it was.
Oh yeah, I cannot watch those movies. They just make me feel awful.
Definitely remember when Ebola first became a thing in the 90s, and like everybody was freaked out.
That's a really scary disease.
Yes, definitely. And I think, you know, one of the things is the coronavirus does not seem to be airborne. By the way. Like, I see a lot of people claiming that it's airborne, or you can get it through your skin. I do not know where that came from.
Well, I mean, I guess that's people not understanding what human-to-human transmission means.
Somebody would have to, like, sneeze on you. Basically, it's like, right now, we know that it's definitely transmitted through droplets. So, like, you know, if somebody, like, sneezes or saliva or something on you.
What about a handshake and a smile?
It's the smile that's the problem.
Basically.
Do not smile at people until this outbreak has been eliminated.
I think if you... But seriously, though, wash your hands.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, you could get it from a handshake if you shook someone's hand and then touched your mouth. Or your nose.
Which is what I usually do after shaking my hand.
Just, like, lick your hand?
I like to get the scent.
that's so gross.
But actually, that's probably the thing that people can do that's the best, is to, like, wash your hands all the time and don't touch your hand. Like,
don't touch other people.
Don't touch your face. I was joking that maybe I would finally be able to stop biting my nails after reading so much coronavirus stuff.
You say joking because you haven't actually stopped.
How about you, Matt?
I'm equally guilty.
Yeah, I mean, I've gotten better about it, but I haven't stopped totally. I'll find myself going there and be like, no.
You just need to put hot sauce on your fingernails, both of you.
The only thing that works for me, honestly, is getting my nails painted.
Mm.
Something about that, I just like won't put my hands in my mouth anymore.
Okay, Matt, we got to paint your nails.
Maybe it could work for you, Matt. Oh,
bright pink.
Hey, whatever you want. It's your body.
What are you on there?
We occasionally need to make jokes so not to go insane covering China.
Yeah.
Thank you for bearing with us.
We are not making light of the coronavirus.
No. If anything, again, this is us keeping sane, or insane in a sane way.
Insane in the membrane.
Wash your hands, and it won't be an issue.
Yeah, I mean, I think we can maybe post an article in the description that has, you know, advice for how to prevent the spread of.
That's a good idea. Yeah. We'll do that. And it's not behind a paywall?
You know, I don't know. It's Foreign Policy Magazine, so they do have a paywall.
Oh, they do have a paywall. Important information, how to protect yourself. Please donate $10 a month to get this information.
I do think that they were trying to take it off the paywall, but no.
Well, should we take a moment to talk about some of the conspiracies?
Conspiracy theories?
Oh, right, the conspiracy theories. Hypotheses. Hypotheses.
I mean, of course, this will get us demonetized, talking about the conspiracy theories.
We'll probably be demonetized anyway.
You know what was sad, actually, about the demonetization thing? I've been watching this guy, Luo Bing. He has, like, a daily video diary that he lives in Wuhan, and he had been doing YouTube videos for a while, but since the lockdown started, he's been doing a daily video diary of life in Wuhan. And then he said today that, like, you know, he doesn't post these in any Chinese social media because he knows that they'll be blocked or whatever. And then today he was talking about he noticed suddenly on YouTube that half of his videos about the coronavirus were demonetized. And he was like, why are they demonetizing? And then I think because he's not as used to, like, he doesn't really know what the demonetization thing is about. Like, he thought that, like, it meant that the Wuhan coronavirus was becoming a sensitive topic internationally. So that, like, maybe, like, other countries were also, you know, because in China, when something becomes a sensitive topic, that's when it gets censored, right?
So essentially, he's confusing China's authoritarian communist system with the way YouTube is behaving.
Yeah. So, well,
I mean, it's funny, but also, like,
it's not funny.
The way YouTube treats certain topics, the sensitive topics, doesn't mean they censor it. It just means they don't allow ad revenue, and then creators are less incentivized to talk about that issue, and then you have less news about it.
It actually is more like the Chinese system of censorship than not, because it's in China, it's not like there are, for the most part, there's not like a clear censorship guideline. It's mostly a system that encourages people to self-censor so they don't cross some vague red line. And that is exactly what YouTube does. It makes creators concerned about, like, oh, well, is this going to be demonetized? Maybe I just won't cover this sensitive topic.
Yeah. And so, I think YouTube is wrong believing that advertisers don't want to advertise on these channels or alongside these videos, because, like, 99% of YouTube viewers are savvy enough to know that the YouTube creator doesn't choose what ads go before their videos. I mean, like, we sometimes get Chinese state-run media ads before our videos, because we talk about Huawei or something.
I loved it when we did the one about Mike Bloomberg's ties to China, and then would get Mike Bloomberg ads.
Oh, the campaign ads. Yeah. That's perfect.
Well, also, as far as I know, it's not like YouTube is asking advertisers, oh, is this okay? They just make that decision on behalf of the advertisers.
Well, you can choose whether or not you care about sensitive issues or something. No, like, now you can choose, like, advertisers get, like, a slate of, like, categories, but not topics.
It's right. Just, I mean, it's funny because, like, you know, Surfshark, which is the VPN company that sponsors China Uncensored, like, you know, we asked them, like, what upcoming episode would you like to sponsor? And they're like, something about Hong Kong or something. Last month, it was something about the coronavirus, please.
Yeah.
Because they want to be, you know, they want to be on videos that do well, but they also know that people who care about these issues are also more likely to want to, you know, use their software. And I think that's wise on behalf, you know, on the part of the advertiser. And there's probably a lot more advertisers that recognize that, like, it doesn't hurt their brand to be associated with a channel that is responsibly talking about hot button issues. It's only helpful, I think. And certainly in Surfshark's case, it's been helpful to them.
There's also a large, you know, area between people who talk about politics on their YouTube channels and, you know, ISIS recruitment videos, you know.
Yes.
And that all kind of got lumped in together.
Right. Which is to say that YouTube was extremely lazy with how they handled it, to just, like, you know, use bots to, you know, bots with voice recognition to get keywords or maybe bots recognizing certain imagery.
Oh, no. I just realized I said ISIS recruitment video.
Oh, no.
Oh, Shelley. Thanks, Shelley.
Oh, boy.
Don't worry. We said coronavirus like 150 times.
Yeah, I guess we'll get that.
So, conspiracy theories.
Yeah, oh boy. Gosh. So, yeah, there are, as I said, because there's so little good information about this coronavirus, especially in the early days, it allowed for a lot of conspiracies to spread.
Right, that plus people do not trust the Chinese Communist Party anyway because they have a history of cover-ups.
Yeah.
I mean, that's definitely understandable.
So, one of the ones, conspiracies, was some people found that there was like a U.S. patent for a coronavirus. And so they're like, oh my gosh, this is proof that the coronavirus is a U.S. biological weapon that they somehow got into China and released it in this wet market. Except that one is a bad conspiracy theory because coronavirus is a big family of viruses. Like SARS was a coronavirus.
But also some of the flu, like more common cold things are under the family of coronavirus.
But basically the virus that is spreading is not that patented virus. There's another similar one that's like, another company has another coronavirus patent. I think it's called the Perbright Institute. And that institute receives funding from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. In case you don't know, Bill Gates is involved in a lot of conspiracy theories, usually like some kind of global depopulation scheme. In fact, actually, I think he was being blamed for an outbreak of Ebola a couple years ago. It was called the Ebola-I. Clever, huh?
Oh, very good.
Yeah.
Okay, just got it.
Hey, quick, Shelley.
Well, because I was thinking of, like, somehow my mind went to like plurals of things, you know, like octopus, octopi, and I was like thinking, is Ebola Ebola?
Multiple Ebolas.
Or Ebola, you know, that's where my brain went.
Nice. You're so innocent in some ways.
Please, let me remain that way.
Yeah. So the idea is that, you know, Bill Gates is spreading this. There are also like coalitions of like research firms trying to find a cure, like a vaccine for this coronavirus that Bill Gates is funding. That's true. So then the conspiracies may be like, oh, he released this virus to profit on it because he needs more money, the poor Bill Gates.
I mean, I like that how that's like Bill Gates trying to fund a vaccine. Immediately people go to like conspiracy theory rather than like, oh, thank goodness that these organizations that are trying to find a vaccine are getting funding.
You know, Bill Gates was very close with Jeffrey Epstein.
Oh, no. All the conspiracies are one.
Did Bill Gates go to the island?
I don't know. I don't know. Maybe. Somebody can leave that in the comments section if they know that off the top of their head.
Man. What if we titled this episode, How the Coronavirus Connects to Jeffrey Epstein? Let's not do that. But
or should we? Well, if you're watching this and that's the title, you know who won this argument. And if it's not the title, you know who won this argument. But yeah, then there are some conspiracy theories that actually might have a little more. You might think twice about it. Like, oh, hey, maybe there's something there. So in Wuhan, there is like a bio lab where they study infectious diseases. And so some people think, oh, maybe the coronavirus somehow escaped from this lab. And I know when they were building this lab, there was like a Rutgers University biologist who was like, you know, there are cases of SARS having escaped from Beijing biolabs. So there's precedent for being concerned about a made-in-China biolab studying infectious diseases.
That is not how SARS started,
not the initial
the
SARS, yeah, not the 2003 one.
Yeah, it's just that when they were studying SARS, like, there were contamination procedures that weren't you know, followed well enough to keep the virus from coming out. But I don't think anybody got sick from that.
Yeah, thank you for that clarification.
Right, and I mean, infectious disease labs are, you know, when there's human incompetence or human laziness, like, it's very easy in an extremely sensitive lab. Like, you know, one person being lazy or incompetent can create a huge problem. And it doesn't mean that there was some sort of like conspiracy to release the virus. You know, people make mistakes.
Yeah. I mean, so there are a couple of conspiracy theories about the Wuhan. Well, there's the Wuhan Institute of Virology, and then there's this other one that's the highest hazard level lab. Mm-hmm. There's two of these. And so people, there have been several conspiracy theories about them, involving also the idea that they may have been, this coronavirus may have been studied as like a bioweapon mm-hmm. in one of these labs.
And you do have cases in the past of like people in the Chinese military talking about creating biological weapons. So, you know, there's all these kernels of truth to it.
Yeah. And I have to say, in terms of the conspiracy theories, oh, also another thing that happened was one of the things that made people think it was a bioweapon, too, was that some researchers in India published a paper where they said that part of the coronavirus genome, this particular coronavirus, matched, there's some sequences that matched things seen in HIV that aren't in SARS or MERS, the Middle East Respiratory Syndrome. So they were like, oh, why? What is HIV doing in there? Is that proof that... Also, I think the paper may have said something about, like, it may not be just fortuitous or something that these HIVs...
Oh, a little hint.
Yeah. So people were like, oh, my God, this is proof that it was definitely a bioweapon. It was, like, engineered, you know? But scientists have also taken a look and seen that those... genomes that are in HIV are also in many other viruses that are not just HIV, so it doesn't necessarily mean that this was an engineered virus.
I also heard something about it's missing some parts of the genome that would match it with like the kind that bats spread, so that people are also using that as like, oh hey, you know, this is not from eating bats, it's from something else, probably a biolab.
Well, probably it's not actually from eating bats. It's probably... I mean, of all of the conspiracy theories, I think the most likely... If we were to put them on a spectrum, probably the most likely one is the idea that it could have escaped from some kind of biolab research.
Yeah.
Right.
And there's another layer to that conspiracy theory. Over the summer... In Canada, there were two Chinese researchers who were at this Canadian infectious disease lab who suddenly were escorted out of the place and stripped of their high-level security clearance. And then a couple of days later, it came out that that lab also was sending infectious diseases to China. And so, you know, there's the connection that in the past, Chinese scientists have tried to steal U.S. U.S. or Canadian intellectual property. There was a case of them trying to steal GMO seeds, for instance. So it's like, oh, were they stealing these samples from Canada and sending it back to China? Did it go to the Wuhan lab? Did it then escape the Wuhan lab?
Yeah, I think there have also been cases of people trying to take, sneak biological specimens or other things that were... from labs from the U.S. to China that were for research.
Didn't the chairman of the Harvard chemistry department that just got in trouble for taking Chinese money, I know he was, it was with the a tech university in Wuhan.
Right.
He was studying nanotechnology.
He was studying nanotechnology, though. But yeah, they gave him money to like set up a research lab in China, I imagine it would be in Wuhan, since Wuhan University.
That guy, there's probably loads of other stuff that's not come out yet.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's some weird compromising stuff involving prostitutes, you know.
Oh, like, yeah. And, you know, I think this is going to be the story that comes out this year or next year, because it reminds me of just the whole organ harvesting thing, just... to what degree Western individuals or companies or maybe even politicians were complicit in the building of that system.
I mean, well, yeah, that's going to be interesting. I do know that there's somebody writing a book about this issue.
Yeah.
So.
Which then makes me think of World War Z, where the zombie virus is spread because of illegal organ harvesting in China.
But don't worry, they fixed that for the movie version that they wanted to release in China.
Yep, and it didn't get released in China anyway.
Well, oh man. Anyway, back to the coronavirus conspiracy theories. Uh-huh. I think also with the Canadian researchers, they were actually let go because they had sent some information to China.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think it was biological material. It was, you know, kind of like patented, like, you know.
Yeah, the story of the biological samples being sent to China mm-hmm. was, they did not make the connection between those two researchers.
But conspiracy theorists did make that connection. I mean, like I said, can we rule anything out right now? Probably not totally, yeah. But the most likely thing of all of these is that it could have escaped from, been research that escaped from a biolab. But did that come from Canada? Like all these additional things, like is it a bioweapon? Like that's where it starts to get.
And we may not even ever know because like if you are responsible for this, like you will do anything to cover that up because your mistake in that biolab has killed so many people. That like your family, and no one can escape the consequences of that politically.
The head of the FDA in China got executed after the Chinese melamine scandal.
Yeah. So I don't. Yeah,
right. No, but I mean they'll do anything to cover it up. It doesn't mean that it won't be found out, but. It may not come to light, and many
or it could just be like some kind of appeasement. Execute some guy, and like say, "Oh, okay, we solved the problem. We executed this schlub.
Done and done."
Well, I think also it could just be a while before we really even understand where. Like, even if it wasn't a conspiracy that's being covered up, like it took years to figure out where SARS came from.
Yeah,
you know, even now some of the initial secrecy over SARS may have been because it's I think pretty clear that the first cases of SARS may have started in the PLA.
Oh, so, People's Liberation Army.
Yeah, so people were like freaking out about that. But like now they think SARS may have come from bats that infected civet cats that were then sold in wet markets.
Wow.
And that's how the human transmission happened. But, like, you know, this is how many years after SARS, and there's still kind of some questions about how it happened. Because, you know, I think also there's a lot of uncertainty when it seems like a virus could just mutate naturally, right?
Yeah.
And in this kind of environment and infect people, that's a lot scarier in a certain sense. And then the idea that, like, oh, maybe the Chinese Communist Party is making bioweapons. Because one is... like human intent, and the other one is just, you know, an act of nature or an act of God or whatever, right?
I mean, it's not really a stretch to imagine that the Chinese Communist Party is working on bioweapons to some extent.
Oh, I'm sure they are. Yeah. But is this one a bioweapon?
It's a botched one, if it is.
Yeah.
All right, and I think with that, we'll wrap up for today. So remember, wash your hands and drink some tea from Path of Cha. Visit go.pathofcha.com/unscripted, and you'll help out this podcast so you can get better coronavirus information than some random weeb on Twitter.
You know, sometimes I feel like we don't advertise ourselves well enough, you know.
That we've been covering China for 8 years?
Better than some random weeb on Twitter.
There we go. And so on that note, everyone listening, please share our stuff because we are terrible at this. I keep getting people who say like, oh, I've been a fan of China Uncensored for years. I just found out you have another show, America Uncovered. So everyone listening, we do have another show, America Uncovered. And please share our stuff. We're not good at this. And with that, thank you for listening. Once again, I'm Chris Chappell.
I'm Shelley Zhang.
And I'm Matt Gnezda.
Talk to you next time.
Go wash your hands.
Ooh.